Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with a Kiplinger editor, and she's our good friend. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. How are you doing?
We're doing great. It's good to have you back. We missed you last week.
Did you? I'm thrilled. Wow.
Jim Ostroff did a great job while you were here.
As always, He's going to steal my gig.
We'll have to start sending him your check, won't we?
Yeah, that's what worries me. That big check.
That big fat check.
Yeah.
Hey, Joan, has it stopped raining in Washington?
Gosh, no. I don't think it ever
really?
Will. Ugh.
Well, look, I have located you some gopher wood.
Now, what's gopher wood?
That's what you build the ark with.
I think that's what we need.
Joan, I thought you'd been, you know, you've been too long since you went through your catechism, Joan.
Right.
And by the way, when you're building your ark, a cubit is 16 inches.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Well, see, you got to come to this show to get stuff like
apparently,
this.
Apparently, yeah.
But I have located some gopher wood and a cubit.
Thank you.
So when you're laying out the keel of your boat and the beam of your boat, a cubit is 16 inches. So
okay.
I don't think you can get a tape measure in cubits at the Home Depot. So I just thought
you're probably right about that.
Pass that along to you. But you know, isn't it interesting though that houses these days are built on 16-inch centers. Studs and rafters are laid out, and joists are laid out on 16-inch centers.
If you say so, that's interesting.
Well, yeah. Well, they've been using that measurement for all these years now. It's a good measurement.
Okay.
Would you like to talk about the letter now?
Love to. Thrilled to.
Trade talks, global trade talks, according to Kiplinger, are on life support. Joan, say it in so.
Boy, yeah, no, things are not going well. I guess that's an understatement if things are on life support.
Actually 4 or 5 years ago, you and I talked about this, and I was very hopeful that America and other nations could have a growth of trade agreements around the world so we could all trade together. But that's not looking so good, is it?
Not at all. We haven't given up yet, but our forecast is that by next summer you'll see everything fall apart, unfortunately.
Why? Do you have any idea why, Joan?
Why they've fallen apart?
Why are they falling apart? I mean, the thing is that there are other trade. There are 120, I think, trade deals, agreements around the world. And we're only a party to maybe a handful of those.
That's true.
And that's not a good thing. One of the things that concerns me, and I think you guys point this out this time, is the U.S. Congress is becoming a little more of a protectionist Congress. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and that's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back by next summer. We're saying that U.S. Congress is becoming trade wary, which I guess to me means more protectionist.
It does, and you got guys like Schumer and Graham, Lindsey Graham, Republican Graham, Schumer the Democrat.
Democrat, right?
Those two, when they stand shoulder to shoulder and talk about protectionism, that's a very frightening thing to me, because those guys obviously don't know how the global marketplace works. They don't understand how the 21st century marketplace is going to work. And when they talk about protectionism, and when you guys report that Congress is becoming more trade weary, what I worry about is a return to what happened to us in the early 1930s with the Smoot-Hawley tariff, which basically threw the world into a depression.
Right, and that's pretty scary. I agree with you.
Well, and they've been watching too much Lou Dobbs, Joe. Lou Dobbs
don't
is
get me started.
Lou Dobbs is dangerous, and I think you probably agree with me about that.
Sure do.
And Lou Dobbs takes only one side. All he's trying to do, all he does is focus on the, you know, the one half of the pendulum swing of global trade. And Joan, if we're going to, in my opinion, if we're going to build relationships with other nations, if we're going to try to find some kind of permanent peace in the world with nations that actually are established. I'm not talking about terrorists. We've got to trade with them. We've got to do business with them, Joan. We've got to give them. We've got to give them access to the global marketplace. And I'm going to repeat. I'm going to repeat a quote that I talk about. I say at least once a week on this show, Joan. And it's from Frederick Bastiat, that great French economist and comedian. He said, "When goods cross borders, armies don't."
Oh, and you've always said that.
That's what right. is it? What is it about that? What is it about? I mean, if you hear that and you believe that, then you believe that there's a peace dividend in trade, don't you?
Right. Absolutely.
So why? What part of that does Congress not get? What part of that's
the whole thing? They don't get the whole thing.
You know what? What the deal is that you've got these shrill people out there who don't understand the global marketplace, who still want to hold on to the way things were in 1950, and that ship has sailed already, but they still want to hold on to that, the unions and some other folks.
Well, it's easier to blame things and causes outside our borders than to look at ourselves.
Right.
If there's a problem.
Right. And Joan, I'll tell you, you know, there are so many countries out there that could go either way with regard to terrorism. They could help us fight the war on terror, or they could become safe harbors for terrorists.
Right.
And we need to be trading with those countries. They, you know, no country that trades together fights each other.
Well, that's true.
And it's very
or
troubling.
Or you'd be loath to start.
That's exactly right. I forgot who said this. Maybe you remember. Somebody said that no two countries where both had McDonald's ever attacked the other one.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody said that was. That wasn't my quote. But you know. But think about it. And I'll tell you, folks, when you hear a member of your congressional delegation, senator, congressman, or woman, when you hear them coming back home as they will next month, to get ready for the fall elections, when you hear them using protectionist rhetoric, they're not doing you any favors. They may be saying they're trying to save your jobs, but they're not doing you any favors. And I will tell you this, they're certainly not doing your children and your grandchildren any favors. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to some economic forecasts right after these messages, and we're going to move on to some other important topics that Kiplinger covers this week. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde.
Baby, are we going out tonight?
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're talking with our good friend Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, I want to stay on this trade issue for just a couple of more minutes. You guys, at the bottom of page one, you got a quote here that I want to talk about for just a second. You say creeping protectionism. And I want to say that word again, term again, folks. Creeping protectionism.
Right, not protectionism, but creeping protectionism.
Creeping protectionism will create new hurdles for exporters. Now, here's the thing, Joan. When I hear you say creeping protectionism, I think that's a very prescient term that you guys use there, Joan, because America has a culture of entrepreneurship. You know that. Everybody knows that. It's the thing that makes America's economy as strong as it is. We have a culture of entrepreneurship. We have a culture where if you want to start a business, if you have an idea, you want to pursue it, everybody around you says, well, you know what? This is America. You got a chance to make that happen. It's an attitude. It's an overall, it's a national support group for entrepreneurs. So that's the culture for entrepreneurship. I'm afraid that what this creeping protectionism is going to do is create a culture of protectionism. That where it sort of you know gets into the bloodstream of the nation and it becomes where it's almost politically incorrect to talk about trading, to talk about opening up borders, to talk about lowering tariffs. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the thing I'm worried about right there.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that.
And we don't need our politicians, we don't need Lou Dobbs, we don't need the news media, the mainstream media, to start talking against trade. Because that's going to be, I mean.
Well, you've got somebody doing that every night of the week.
Oh, yeah, I know it. But I'm doing it every day of the week, too, to the degree that I can. And there are others out there like me who believe that trade is not a bad thing. Trade is a good thing.
Right.
And the thing I keep telling people, Joan, is what Dorothy told her dog. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
Anymore.
It's the 21st. It's the 21st century. And we got to get that into our head. And it may not be, it may not be kind. It may not be gentle. It may be a little abrupt. It may be a little rude. But it's the way it is. It's the reality that we live with, that we live in, and of the world that we live in. And we're not, and we don't. In my opinion, protectionism is fallacious. Protectionism is a false argument, and it does not lead to productivity. It does not lead to fostering democracy, and so that's my argument, Joan. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, it's just kind of funny. All these years, I've always thought free trade good, protectionism bad. But I think that may be why we're talking about creeping protectionism here. That pendulum may be swinging slightly. It's unfortunate, but it does seem to be happening.
And if it gets into the culture.
Yeah, and that's
like entrepreneurship has gotten into the culture.
Right.
It'll be as bad for the economy and for the world as the entrepreneurial culture is good for the economy and the world.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have to be careful, folks. There apparently seems to be a tension out there, and so if you just I'm not trying to sway you to my opinion. I'm just trying to let you realize that there's another argument out there against these things and to consider them. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economic forecast. I lost one prediction last week.
Ooh.
You know, I predicted that interest rates would go to 5% on the Fed funds rate and 8 on the prime, and that would be it for the year, and they busted my prediction last week.
Well, I think our prediction must have been busted, too, because if you notice, our forecast on interest rates has changed. We're calling this a new forecast, and I'm sorry to say, we're saying prime will reach between 8.25% and 8.5%.
Yeah. In fact, the first of the year, after I came out with my prediction, you guys came out with yours. Not that you were reading mine or anything like that, but that is one of the things that we were kind of in lockstep on, Joan, was both of our forecasts for interest rates. But we both missed that one, and it's because of inflation, isn't it, Joan?
Oh, absolutely. The Fed is dead set against inflation and is trying to make sure. It doesn't have enough evidence that inflation is under control. So this, the interest rate hikes continue.
Well, they're going to have plenty of evidence real soon, Joan, because small business owners are going to have to cut back.
Right.
When they have to borrow money at 10.5%, 11%, what that does, Joan, is that debt service that's involved in all these loans. That we have to borrow because we have to borrow our working capital from banks. Most small business owners do. When we start building that debt service into our cash flow, we start getting to a point where the banks are saying, you know what? Are you sure that you can service this debt at this level? And banks start taking a more jaundiced look at loan proposals. And so with small businesses creating over half the U.S. economy. It's not going to take long for the Fed to get their wish, which is to slow the economy a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's the key term there, a little bit. You don't want it slowing too much.
But then, as you've pointed out many times, Joan, before, we don't want to get stagflation, where inflation keeps going up even while the economy is going down.
Right. I remember that too.
That's the ugly stuff, right. Quick break. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to talk about Some business costs that are on the rise, and boy, howdy, have we noticed those around here. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Price.
Hey,
now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blassingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm glad to be back with you. And Joan Pride is our guest. And Joan, you know, that little opener there starting to hit a little bit home when it starts talking about the heavyweight champion of the world. I'm trying to get down to the cruiserweight, Joan, but I'm not having much luck. It's hard.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not having much luck losing any weight. Joan, let's move over and talk on page two about the business costs. Now, one of the things you guys pointed out this time is that hotel prices are going up.
Right, and not only are they going up, I guess they haven't stopped going up.
Right.
Because, in fact, and the problem here is that the rate of increase is on the increase.
Right.
Because we're saying that the increase last year was 6%, or I should say this year, and in 2007 we expect it to be 7% more. And then all the little attendant features you have at the hotel are going to go up, too.
Yeah, the mini bar that you like so much, Joan, that's getting out of hand, too.
Yeah.
But you know, Joan, and you guys don't report this week. Maybe you're going to do it next week, but I don't want to preempt you. But as we're talking about these travel costs, I've noticed that hotel prices have gone up, too. I don't think of it in percentages. I think of it in terms of dollars, you know. You know, whenever I travel, and a lot of times I'm just staying one night. You know, I'm just going to be there one night for I'm in and out or something. You know, maybe I could, in Flyover America, I could get a pretty nice room for 80, 90 bucks or something like that. Now they're, you know, it's 110 or something like that. But, Joan, that's not the one that takes our breath away here in my operation. The one that takes our breath away around here is the airline prices.
Oh, yeah.
I used to get nonstop flights to D.C. for 200, 180, 200, 220 a round trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, and this has only been like three years ago or so.
Right.
And I remember thinking, you know what? This is a really good deal. I'm surprised they're not charging me more for this. But now the same ticket round trip is between $500 and $700.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that, I'm just using that one leg as an example, that one rider as an example.
Right.
It's now, you know, you talk about hotel prices going up 7 to 10%. Airline prices have gone up 50 to 100 to 200%.
Wow.
And so, in my opinion, when they were having so much trouble making a living, making a profit, they were probably weren't charging me enough. And now, in my opinion, they're charging too much.
It sure looks that way.
They should have leveled it out a little bit. But folks, if you've done any traveling lately on the airlines, it's gone. It's really now you have to shop around, Joan, and you might have to drive to another airport. Sometimes we found some pricing that's out of one airport it's $500, but if I drive an extra 30 minutes to another airport, maybe I save $200.
Wow.
You know, and so you can do that. You have to shop around a little bit.
Right.
But, yeah, business costs, especially travel costs, are going up. And, Joan, the reason I wanted to land on this a little bit is to talk about some of this technology that we now have that many of us don't use.
You mean like video conferencing?
Yes.
And that sort of thing, yes.
That's right. What do you know about that?
Well, I still think, and you and I have talked about this, that in some cases there are cultures at firms that don't lend themselves to video conferencing and audio conferencing and teleworking and things like that, that there's a lot of need for face-to-face, but it may not really be a need for face-to-face. It may be a cultural thing that the companies have to get beyond.
Well, there's a software, a program, an ASP, an application service provider. I don't get any money from them. They're not one of my sponsors, but they've got a pretty good gig, and it's called GoToMeeting.com.
Oh.
Where you can actually, you know, put your slides up on a website, and the people can actually see your presentation on the screen. It's real time. And so, but technologies like that, like video conferencing and that sort of thing, if travel prices keep going up, I'm going to get better at video conferencing, and I know other people will too.
Sure.
Because it's going to get, and plus the fact that, I'm telling you, Joan, prices are not, airline prices are not, I still say that those kinds of technologies are going to ultimately, when it gets in the culture, back to the culture thing, Joan, which you talked about, you alluded to a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
when it gets into the culture where it's generally accepted that you don't go to somebody's office to do business with them, but you hook up with them over video, over, and now with voice over IP being so much better, we can make phone calls and talk over the internet a lot more effectively, and more people with broadband connections. The airlines, the whole travel industry, I believe, over the next 10 years, is going to have a major paradigm shift. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the economy and something called net neutrality. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. And the Kiplinger letter, ladies and gentlemen, is the letter that we work off of every week, and that's produced by the Kiplinger editors, where Joan Pride is a senior editor. And they have an outstanding website that I like telling people about, kiplinger.com. And they've also got these other publications besides the Kiplinger letter, which is the 80-plus-year-old letter that's been out every week since 1923. That was weekly, and then they have three biweekly letters: the agriculture letter, a tax letter, and the California letter. Did I say that right?
That's
California,
right.
Tax and agriculture.
There you go.
And those are biweekly, and then they got a magazine that Joan's going to tell you about.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. Everything you wanted to know about personal finance.
Personal finance, but also goods that we buy, things that we buy, products we buy. How we spend our money on education, health, that kind of thing too, right, Joan?
Oh, absolutely.
All those things. So, and you can find that at the newsstand. What about the phone number, Joan?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
I hope you'll find especially the Kiplinger letter. Find one of these, but give them a try. They got a 30-day free trial that they'll give you, and I encourage you to check that out. Joan, let's talk about the SBA. By the way, they're about to get a new administrator. Hector Barreto has resigned. As many people know, our good friend Hector's is moving on to other things, and they got a new guy, Stephen
Preston.
Preston, there you go. Thank you.
That was good because I knew you. I was afraid you were going to ask me the name, and I could only remember the last name. You only remembered the first name.
Yep.
So between the two of us, we have one brain.
Exactly, and he has gone through one round of hearings.
And done very well,
confirmation.
I think.
Yeah, I think so. And but has not been confirmed. So Hector is still the administrator.
It's coming
there,
though, because I believe. Did the Senate Small Business Committee vote him out? I think they did.
I haven't heard the news on that.
I think they approved him, but I'm not sure.
I hope so. And anyway, but back to the news of the day.
I'm going to check on that while we're talking.
All right, I appreciate it. Back to the news of the day, though, the SBA 7A program, which is their big loan program.
Yes.
They've got good news there, don't they, Joan?
Yes. Well, as you know, Congress has to reauthorize the Small Business Administration and all those programs this year. Every 4 years it comes up for reauthorization. I shouldn't say the SBA itself, the programs that it runs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is the 7A program. And the chairman of the House and Senate Small Business Committees have both agreed that the largest loan that a small business owner can get under this program should go up to $3 million from $2 million. That's pretty good because
mm-hmm.
it hasn't been gone up in a while. And in tandem, they will raise a portion of the loan that can be guaranteed. I mean, the percentage will stay the same. It'll still be 75%, but the dollar figure will go up to keep the guarantee at 75%.
Well, exactly. And of course, all that's good. That's good for small business owners out there. I'm glad they're raising the amount from 2 to 3 million. That you can borrow, because that's good for growing small business owners out there. Small businesses are more likely to be a partner an integrated partner with a larger company than they are just to be a vendor. And in order to ramp up to make that kind of a connection with your customers, sometimes it takes more money than it used to. In fact, most of the time, it takes more money than it used to. And I'm glad that the SBA is making these changes. Joan, let's move over and talk about net neutrality. What do you know about net neutrality? It's a complicated issue.
Well, yes. Basically, I guess the idea of non-neutrality would be to have different tiers of pricing. I guess you could have, with the post office, you have first-class mail and second-class mail.
Right.
So on the Internet and with email, for example, you could have different classes of pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to pay more, you get things faster, or maybe you get your stuff sent faster. But there's two schools of thought on whether this tiered pricing should be allowed or not.
The way I think of it, Joan, and folks, I have to tell you, I studied this thing pretty hard for the last 3 or 4 months, and Joan, it took me a long time to really come to this understanding. And there was a Wall Street Journal article that really did a good comparison about a month or so ago that really helped me out a whole lot. Even though I've covered it on the show a couple of times before with experts, it took me a long time to really figure this out. Here's the way I see it. Currently, Joan, we have basically net neutrality in the Internet right now.
Pretty much.
Because everybody who wants to use the Internet can use the Internet, no extra charge. You can use as much of it as you want. You can use as much of the backbone that companies have provided you as you want, et cetera, et cetera. But, sometimes you do have to pay for bandwidth if you use more bandwidth, but that just comes through your ISP, the people who connect you to the Internet. But there is no regulation, there is no rule, there is no law against Comcast, for example, from charging you extra for you to download movies. So if you and I are living next door, Joan, and you never download movies, and I download lots of movies, I'm using more of the backbone than you are.
Hey, that's not fair.
And so, that's right. And so that's the point, is that some people who have the ability to provide those kinds of products want to be able to charge me more for my extra use. And when that happens, net neutrality is a thing of the past.
Right.
Some people want the government to impose regulations which require net neutrality on the Internet.
Ah.
And that's where the argument is. Should the Internet be regulated, be allowed to be neutral, or should be made to be neutral by law, or should it be allowed to be free-flowing and people charge whatever they want to charge? We're going to come back and wrap this up and some other issues right after these messages. Joan Prater is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and it's 10 Till.
One more thing.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you use it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog when you get there. And you can come and get it, or we'll subscribe. We'll let you subscribe to it, and we'll send it to you if you want us to. And that's updated 5 days a week. Joan Prater is our guest. She's with the Kiplinger Editor. She's senior editor there. And Joan, you got a report for us about the new administrator of the SBA.
Yes, we had discussed the fact that he had a confirmation hearing before the Senate Small Business Committee, but apparently they have voted him out of the committee unanimously. So now the nomination goes to the Senate floor. And as you all know, Congress is on its little vacation for the 4th of July. So I would think that soon after they come back, the Senate will be confirming him.
Right. I think you're right. And so that should happen certainly this month. And I know they're already planning a farewell party for Hector Bredow, the current administrator, the outgoing administrator. And we on this show, Joan, wish him well. And we look forward to continuing a long-term friendship with Hector, and to building a new friendship with the new administrator, Mr. Preston, and whom we expect to have on this show before too long, Joan. We'll be getting him on hopefully this summer.
I hope so.
Let's go back to net neutrality. Joan, this is a big issue. A lot of people, I'm concerned that small business owners and the public are going to let this thing get co-opted by the special interest groups on either side, and let them fight it out, because it's a fairly complicated issue.
Yes.
And again, the best way I can say it is, we now have net neutrality, but only because companies typically aren't charging more for more access to the internet. When they start doing that, people who want net neutrality are going to sue and try to get Congress to pass regulations that will impose net neutrality, which many people who are free traders, many people who I typically, which typically would be me, don't want to stifle innovation. They want to let people create things and charge for the things that they create and the risks that they take.
Well, it makes sense.
And so, you know, if you drive more, you pay for more gas, right?
Right.
So everybody isn't entitled to the same amount of gas, all the gas they want for X amount of dollars a month.
Yeah.
If I drive more than you, I buy more gas than you. And it's a very similar thing to the internet. But it is a complicated thing. It's very controversial. And I encourage everyone to learn about it because, Joan, as you know, the internet is involved in everyone's life today.
Well, and I think it's important to know what side of this debate you're on before the decision gets made for you.
That's exactly right. Because then you're going to look around, you're going to say, wait a minute, what happened?
Yeah.
When did that happen? Who decided that? Who got to do that? You know?
Right.
So that's the reason why you listen to this show, folks, so you can stay informed.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, let's move over and talk just a little bit of politics.
Okay.
Let's go over to page 4.
Yes.
What's you guys still say the Republicans will hold on to the Senate.
Right. We believe that Democrats will gain some seats in the Senate in the November elections, but not enough to overcome their deficit in the Senate.
Where are the likely places that they'll gain?
Well, interesting you should ask that. Pennsylvania is one. You know, the sitting senator is Rick Santorum, a Republican.
Right. Is he in trouble?
We say he needs a political miracle to win.
Wow.
He's going up against a popular man, Bob Casey, who was the son of a very popular ex-governor. And who's pretty conservative himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that's, I think, going
to work. Well, in a state that seems to be increasingly Democratic over the last 6 years or so, a conservative Democrat might fit the bill for them.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And in another state, Montana, Senator Conrad Burns has been tied to the what's known here as the Abramoff bribery scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has not been convicted of anything in any way, but there are accusations and people hear that. So he is trailing in the polls.
Right.
Now, in Missouri, Senator Talent, Jim Talent, who I think was he the chairman of the House Small Business Committee?
He absolutely was,
and
a good man, and he's been on the show before.
Yes, but his victory, I think he was first elected to the Senate in 2002, and that victory was very narrow, so he's in a neck-and-neck race now for re-election.
Right. I hope he wins. He's a good man, a staunch supporter of small businesses.
Right.
The Republicans, do they have a chance to pick up anything, Joan?
Well, I don't think
what about Minnesota? There's an open seat in Minnesota. What are the chances there? Do you guys think they might do some good in Minnesota?
That I'll have to report back to you on.
All right. Hey, thanks, Joan, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
It still looks like, according to Kiplinger, the Republicans will hold on to the Senate.
Yes.
Thank you, Joan. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.